Lai Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachorni Nivisesa Sinyavani Paskachade Satarne Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravita Shri Vishatam Vitam Shri Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's December 2nd, 2020, class in Hawaii over the internet, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23, Maharaj Prithu's Going Back Home, Text 27. Tesham Durapam Kim Yan Chanyan. Marjanam Bhagavat Padam. Bhuvi Lola Yusho Yevai. Naish Karmyam Sadayan Kyuta. Please chant. Tesham. Of them.
Of them.
Durapam.
Durapam.
Difficult to obtain.
Difficult to obtain.
Kim.
Kim.
What?
What?
Two.
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 But.
But.
Anyat. Anything else.
Anything else.
Marjanam.
Of the human beings.
Bhagavat Padam. The Kingdom of God. Bhuvi. In the world. Lola. Flickering. Ayushaha. Span of life. Yay. Those. Vai. Certainly. Naish Karmyam. The path of liberation. Sadayanti. Execute. Uta. Exactly. Srila Prabhupada's translation. There's somebody who needs to be muted because they're making a lot of hiss. Srila Prabhupada's translation. In this material world, every human being has a short span of life, but those who are engaged in devotional service go back home, back to Godhead, for they are actually on the path of liberation. For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9:33, Lord Krishna says, Anityam asukam lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. The Lord here declares that this material world is full of miseries, asukham, at the same time as flickering, anityam. Therefore, one's only duty is to engage himself in devotional service. This is the best end to which human life can be put. Those devotees who are constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord achieve not only all material benefits, but also all spiritual benefits, for at the end of life they go back home, back to Godhead. Their destination is described in this verse as Bhagavat Padam. The word Padam means abode, and Bhagavat means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the destination of the devotees is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, Naish Karmyam, which means transcendental knowledge, is also significant. Unless one comes to the platform of transcendental knowledge and offers devotional service to the Lord, one is not perfect. Generally, the processes of Gyan, Yoga, and Karma are executed life after life, before one gets a chance to render pure devotional service to the Lord. This chance is given by the grace of a pure devotee, and it is in this way only that one can actually attain liberation. In the context of this narration, the wives of the demigods repented because although they had the opportunity of a birth in a higher planetary system, a lifetime spanning millions of years and all material comforts, they were not as fortunate as Prithu Maharaj and his wife, who were actually surpassing them. In other words, Prithu Maharaj and his wife scorned promotion to the higher planetary systems and even to Brahmaloka because the position which they were attaining was incomparable. In Bhagavad Gita 8.16, the Lord affirms, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Arvartino Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita 8.16. Oh, from the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. In other words, even if one goes to the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he has to return to the miseries of birth and death. In the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita 9.21, the Lord also asserts, Yetam Bhuktra Sargalokam Vishalam Shene Punye Marchaloka Vishanti. When they have thus enjoyed heavenly sense pleasure, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, after exhausting the results of pious activities, one has to come again to the lower planetary systems and begin a new chapter of pious activities. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12, Naiskamyam Ap Yachuta Bhava Varti Jam. The path of liberation is not at all secure unless one attains the devotional service of the Lord. Even if one is promoted to the impersonal Brahmajyoti, he runs every chance of falling down into this material world. If it is possible to fall down from the Brahmajyoti, which is beyond the higher planetary systems in this material world, then what can be said of the ordinary yogis and karmis, who can only be elevated to the higher material planets? Thus the wives of the denizens of the higher planetary systems did not much appreciate the results of karma, jnana, and yoga. Tesam durapam kim twanyam marchanam bhagavat padam bhuvi lo la yusho yevai naishkarmyam sarayan chuta. In this material world, every human being has a short span of life, but those who are engaged in devotional service go back home, back to Godhead, for they are actually on the path of liberation. For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. So this is one of the several places where we find a glorification of human life. And human life here in Sanskrit, marjanam, those who die. The demigods are often called the immortals because they live so long that it's practically compared to human beings as if they don't die. Right? Prabhupada sometimes talks about insects that live for only, 24 hours. And compared to them, we human beings are immortal. So compared to us, the demigods are immortal. We are the ones who die. Marjanam. I like the word Naishkarmyam. So I had a god sister named Naishkarmi, and her legal name was Karmi. Yeah, her parents, I think her father was a minister, and they named her Karmi because it means the fruits of your work, and they thought that was a really pretty name. And when Srila Prabhupada initiated her, and he asked, so what is your name? And she said, Karmi, and Prabhupada laughed. In those days in ISKCON, we used to say they were devotees and karmis. We used to just call the non-devotees karmis. So he laughed. And he said, now your name is Naishkarmi. So here in Naishkarmyam, the path of liberation, Naishkarmyam is very much like the word akarma. In Bhagavad Gita 4.17, Krishna talks about karma, vikarma, and akarma. That work that does not entangle you. So here are the demigod ladies. They are praising human life. They are particularly praising human life because they are praising Prithu and Archie. Of course, Prithu and Archie were not ordinary human beings. They were not human beings in Kali Yuga. But still, compared to the demigods, they appear to be Marchana, people who lived a short life. Again, when they lived for a very long time. And as Prithu Maharaj was a Shaktiva's avatar, he was not even an ordinary human being. still they were thinking like that. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, interesting from one perspective, because as Srila Prabhupada says, how the demigods, they have such a nice position, right? They have a wonderful position. He says here, lifetime spanning millions of years in all material comforts. Many times Srila Prabhupada will say that the sense enjoyment on the heavenly planets is thousands of times greater than that which is available on our Earth planet. And if we think about our own sense pleasures here, you know, beautiful music and delicious food and beautiful sunsets. I saw a video the other day of the Northern Lights, and it was just stunning. You know, the beauty of the Northern Lights. So we have some beautiful things here, you know, our romantic encounters, our, you know, we just think about our various sense pleasures, and if we think about multiplying them by a thousand times or thousands of times. I mean, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar goes to the coverings of the universe, where he there finds the subtle forms, like the blueprints of all material enjoyments, and he says there are entities there, there are jivas there, that are enjoying, you know, millions of times what we're enjoying on Earth. I mean, again, even here, we can see that there's different grades of enjoyment. Right? Like we who are eating, as you know, many of you are listening from Hawaii, and you know, I really miss the food in Hawaii. So I often like to tell the story. Bhakti Marg Swami came to our home once in Hawaii, and we made some guacamole. He said, "What's the recipe?" And I said, "Fresh butter avocados from Hawaii." You know, the rest of the world, you mostly just get the Haas. So, you know, the enjoyment in Hawaii of eating fresh, you know, fresh sitapal and fresh butter avocados, and it doesn't compare, you know, to somebody eating some prepared, you know, chemically laden food they've gotten from the supermarket in the northern parts of Minnesota. So we can say, you know, that there's these stark gradations even on this planet. Or people who are in some horrible situation. There's so many people on this planet now, like there's been wars going on in Yemen for a long time, and many people there are malnourished. They don't even get enough food to eat. They literally look like skin and bones. And you know, those of us living in relative comforts, we may be enjoying 1,000 times more than they are. So there's all this relative enjoyment, or if we compare ourselves to lower than human beings, you know, creatures who are living outside in all kinds of weather and always afraid that some predator animal is going to eat them, and just, you know, eating whatever food they can. They're spending all day, you know, trying to find some food here and there and drinking out of dirty puddles and so many things, and how our position of enjoyment is so much higher. So the demigod's position of enjoyment is so much higher than ours. It's inestimable. It's inestimable. It's just fantastic. And you would think that, well, that's just a blessing. I mean, it is a kind of blessing, and that they would just say, wow, you know, we really have an advantage. But they're seeing that human life also has its advantages. Human life also has its advantages. So we could say, and of course it is said many times, one can go back to Godhead and attain the perfection of life from any position. One can go back to Godhead from hell. One can go back to Godhead from the heavenly planets. It's not that you have to come to Earth in order to go back to Godhead. However, there is some special facility, special ability in being a human. And it's good to be grateful for what one has, and it's good to take advantage of what one has. That's the main message that I get from these kind of verses. In other words, I don't take these sort of verses as saying, you know, well, we humans are better than the demigods. you know, they also have facility for Krishna consciousness, and in many ways, the demigods have more facility for Krishna consciousness. They're more in sattva-gun. Their lives are more peaceful. Their Bhagavatams are larger. Sometimes we get a question about the Bhagavatam, and we have to say, that must be in one of the cantos that's in the upper planets. The answer is, you know, not in our existing 12 cantos. So they have many advantages And like on Indra's planet, they're personally seeing the Lord in the form of Vamadeva and so forth. But it's best to look at the advantage of our own situation. And I see that these verses are there for us to focus on those advantages. So here it says short life, marchana. We don't live very long. Now, in one sense, not living very long is a disadvantage. You don't have much time. Right? You don't have much time. So, as some of you know, I work with the Shastric Advisory Council. We're a group of scholars who writes papers for the GBC. And often they ask us to write very complicated papers, and they often don't really give us a lot of time to write these very complicated papers. And so we always have, especially some members, who want more time. You know, they want more time. I just had a talk with one of our members today, you know, can we have more time? I said, no, we can't have more time. The deadline's over. You know, can I just have some more time? Or we're like that, you know, children are like that. It's time to go to bed. Oh, can I just hear another story and play with another toy? And can I just have this? And just can I have somehow have more time? Right? Or Prabhupada talks about one man he knew who was dying and said, can I just have another 4 years? It would let me finish my plans. I just have some more time. And especially we feel that way in Kali Yuga when our lives are very short. You know, 100 years is astonishing, actually. I mean, what I've seen is that once somebody hits 60, if they die, nobody's surprised. You know, under 60, it's like, oh, it's untimely. But after 60, it's kind of like, all right, they're already old. That's not a long time, you know, for those of us who are over 60. Well, you know, that the life went by really, really fast. So on one hand, we might say, you know, oh, I really want more time. But there's another component of scarcity. When we don't have a lot of time, or we don't have a lot of anything, this applies to scarcity of many things, but when we don't have a lot of time, it's easier to be focused. I'm sure everybody has found such to be the case with deadlines, right? Like I have some work to do in preparation for a meeting today at 3 o'clock. And the fact that I have a meeting today at 3 o'clock focuses me. All right, I just got to focus on that work and I can't be distracted by other things. Yes? Now, in one sense, having that kind of focus can be a problem. Right? If we're always under pressure and we always have scarcity of time, a lot of our higher creative functions are impeded. A lot of our pleasures are impeded. So it has its downside, but its positive side is it can make us very focused. I have a deadline, we call it. So this marchana, I don't have a lot of time. I have to focus on the thing I have to do. Right, if you're trying to make a train or a plane or something, you have to focus on packing and getting your house ready to leave. Right, if you have we have these classes at a certain time and then I have a deadline that I have to prepare for the class. You know, anything like that. You're making an offering for the deities that has to be at a certain time. And so you're very focused. Right, you're dressing the deities, has to be dressed at a certain time. There's a time that just, it doesn't matter if you're not done. Right, if you're not done at 7, it doesn't matter. The offering has to be made anyway. Right, if you're not ready for the plane's going to take off. The meeting's going to start. You know, Prabhupada gives the example that the shop closes at a certain time. So I've given this example before. How when I was expecting my third child, I think I was like 8 months pregnant, and my next oldest child was only 3. So actually not even 3 yet. So I had to get some banking done. We only had one car, and my husband had the car, so I had to walk. So I put my child in the stroller, and then 8 months pregnant, you're not walking very fast. And I got to the bank 3 or 4 minutes before 5 o'clock, closes at 5. They wouldn't let me in. They said, we're already closed. They didn't care. They didn't care that I had a 2-year-old in a stroller and I was 8 months pregnant. They just didn't care. We're closed. And that's what human life is like. You know, you run out of time. And it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're only 42. It doesn't matter if you're only 63. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you didn't finish this and you didn't finish that and you want to do this. We're done. We're closing. This is your deadline. And the advantage of that is that you become focused. There are some interesting studies on scarcity, and I've noticed this in my own life. Like, let's say that you have 6 months to get something done. So often the first couple months you may kind of, well, you know, I got lots of time. And once you get past the midpoint, then you start thinking, whoa, I really got to get serious about this. You know, I really, really got to get serious. And we find, in fact, that in the ashram system, the idea is when you hit 50 years of age, then you really have to get serious. And there's something psychologically that happens. I mean, I know with me, my husband and I entered the Vanaprastha ashram. He was 52, I was only 41. And I remember at the time thinking, okay, I'm 41. Who knows if I'm going to live into my 80s? I might have already passed half my life. And yeah, there's something psychologically that happens when you pass the halfway point. And all of a sudden you go, oh, I better get it together. And then we have, you know, what's the real purpose of human life? What do I really have to do? Now, the non-devotees, when they hit the middle of life, they often have what we call a midlife crisis for this reason, where they say, oh no, my life is at least half over, maybe it's more than half over. I didn't do this, I didn't get this, I didn't get this, you know. Yeah, you know, my spouse is okay, but I'm not really excited anymore, and I think I'll find somebody new. I think I'll get a new career. You know, they take this natural intensity and focus that is part of our short life, especially in Kali Yuga, and they focus it on having the perfect marriage or the perfect career or the perfect living situation, which of course doesn't happen in this world. They move it to something else. But what it's meant to be on is, how can I use this life to find the highest meaning, the highest good, the highest level of self-realization? And for the demigods, because they live so long and they have so much facility, it's a lot harder for them to focus. And on one hand, they are very much in sattva-guna, whereas human beings are generally in rajaguna. They might even be seeing the personality of Godhead visiting their planet. They have this much bigger bhagavatam, but their mood is, I have time. I got time. I got plenty of time. And I'm already so close. You know, I'm already so close. I'm already in such good consciousness. I got time. I'm already so close. And so they may just miss it. They may just miss it. You know, the tortoise and the hare is a good example. But for we human beings, like, I don't have much time. And I'm really far away. And one thing as we go on in bhakti is this sort of ironic thing that the further we progress in bhakti, the further we feel. We see that our goal is unlimited and we feel further away. So we have this sort of urgency. Now, we can misuse this urgency. In the early days of the Hare Krishna movement in the West, the devotees who were rather fanatic converts would sometimes misuse this sense of urgency to induce people to just, you know, drop their studies and their families and their jobs and move in the ashram. And you know, later on, the people had to refine some balance in their life. So we know of people who left university 2 weeks before they were supposed to graduate, and they left their spouse because their spouse didn't want to get initiated immediately, and so many things. So there was a... And later on, for many of these people, there was some regret, which means it was a charity in the mode of passion. So there was, for many people, there was some regret, and then, you know, after spending whatever, 5-6 years in the ashram, like, wait a minute, I can't sustain this. I need a more balanced life. It can be used to manipulate people. You know, you have to work 15 hours a day for the temple because you're not going to live very long, that kind of thing. But overall, it is an advantage. And the advantage is it can make us serious and make us focused. Another great advantage that we have as human beings, especially in Kali Yuga, where our life is very short, and it's really asukamanichim in Kali Yuga. I mean, whoa! You know, and Kali Yuga lives are just so full of misery and they're so short. And the process that's really being pushed in Kali Yuga is bhakti. You know, to go this gradual, you know, bhagunam jamanam ante ganamam prapajate vasudevam sarvamiti samahatma sadurlaba, this multi-life plan is not so much propounded in bhakti, in Kali Yuga rather. You know, this concept of I'll take up karma, take up gan, take up yoga, and eventually you'll come. No, the pushing of the acharyas like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but even other acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarkacharya, we were just studying about Nimbarkacharya the other day, is just take to bhakti. Just take to bhakti. Don't worry about karma, gan, yoga. I mean, we have activities, philosophy, and meditation in bhakti, but they don't cover bhakti. Jnana karma anavritam. They don't cover bhakti. They are assistants to bhakti. We don't even mix them with bhakti. We don't want to do karma mishra bhakti, gyan mishra bhakti, or yoga mishra bhakti. We really want to do just uttama bhakti, just pure bhakti, which again involves activity and it involves knowledge and it involves meditation. But we really want to have perfection through the fastest, easiest method, because we don't have much time. And, sorry to say this, we're not very smart. myself included. We're not very smart, we're not very competent, we're not really very anything. You know, we're just barely human in Kali Yuga. We're just, you know, many of us so-called humans, or we're called two-legged animals. And if we look around, we'll see that a lot of humans in Kali Yuga are humans in name only. People are proud of being practically like animals. So and as I say many times, we're on the lowest of the middle planetary systems. Just barely middle class. You know, so we need something easy. We need something easy. I mean, thinking again, because we just finished this major paper for the Shastric Advisory Council. It's 175 pages long. And you know very well that, you know, one of my friends was asking me, when can I read it? I said, well, the GPC have to approve. I said, but it's 175 pages. And she said, well, I'd never read that. I said, well, we're also going to have a summary paper, 24 pages. Oh, I'll read that. Right? And we always experience many members of the GPC, just give me a one-page bullet point summary, you know. Just give me a summary. And I know for myself that many times people will recommend books for me to read. I've always loved to read. And if it sounds really interesting, sometimes I'll think, I wonder if there's a 5 or 10 minute video I could watch by the author that just summarizes the books. In fact, there's a big market for publishing summaries of books. And people just read 20 pages instead of a 200 page book. So, you know, because we don't have a lot of time, and because we're not very smart, manda sumanda matayo, you know, in former ages, people didn't even need books. They could hear things and just remember them. For me, I hear something and I immediately forget it. Huh? What was that again? Oh, you find this as a teacher all the time, right? That you say something and right after you say it, somebody says, where is it? And you're thinking, man, I just said that. So you say it again. You know, and 5 minutes later, well, so where is that? And you're like, oh my God, you know, how many times do I have to say the same thing? But you know, we're all like that. You know, when I'm the hearer, then sometimes I'll say, hey, could you rewind that and repeat that? Could you repeat it more slowly? I remember once attending a class by Bhakti Vigyanmarsh. It was this 5 session. Each session was 3 hours long. On liberation through sound. And at one point, I said, could you give us a handout? You know, give us something simple. So bhakti is like that. It's the summary. It's the handout. It's the, you know, one-page bullet point. Right? There's a God. He's a person. You're a soul, not the body. You know, the reason we're in Maya is we're rebellious. If we want to have perfection, then we have to surrender in loving service. And the highest point of loving service is prema. And the place where prema is most expressed is in the spiritual world. And it's simple, simple stuff. Right? Like Das Mula Tattva Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Really simple. Oh! You know, one thing we're working on for the GBC is this really simple statement like that of Siddhanta. Oh, okay, I get that. You know, I get that. So bhakti is like that. If you take everything in karma, everything in gyan, everything in yoga, everything in the scriptures, and you, what's the simple essence? What's the essence? Yes? Of course, this question is asked in many religious traditions. When Jesus was asked, what's the essence? He said, to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your might. And the second commandment, which is like the first, is to love your neighbor as yourself. I think the Maimonides, the Ramban, also said something very similar. And we have Bhakti Vinod, who says, Nam Ruchi and Jive Doya. Love the name, love God, and be kind to all living entities. There you go. That's it. What should I do? You know, Maharaj Parikit is like, I'm going to die. What do I do? Why don't we hear and chant about the Lord? That's what we need to do. That's it. Because I'm really focused. I don't have a lot of time. I don't have a lot of time. I want a meaningful life. What about the Supreme Meeting? What do I do? Love God and be nice to everybody. Oh, okay. You know, simple bhakti. Now, we can expand, and we have the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where Rupa Goswami writes about 64 angas, and he gives shastric references for all of them, and then he writes about the five rasas and the seven secondary, the five sthaibhavas, the seven secondary sthaibhavas, and the vibhavas, and the anubhavas, and the sattvika bhavas, with examples of each, and then you have commentary on that by Jiva Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and then he does the Ujjwala Neelamani, where he expands more into Madhurya Bhava on the same topics, and we have all the writings of the Goswamis with different leelas. We have the basic in the Bhagavad Gita, then we have the whole Bhagavatam, we have the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have all these classes we're giving all the time. So we can expand on it, we can expand on it, we can expand on it. But bhakti itself is very, very simple. Sarva dhamman pracha jam mame kam sharanam vraja hum tvam sarva pape vyo mokshi sham yasu jam. Man mana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaru. Mam eva shashir tvayam. Very, very simple. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. Worship me. Bas, that's all. That's all. Oh, okay. I can focus on that. And so that's such a blessing. Such a blessing. Short life gets me focused, and I know what to focus on. Fall in love with God. Fall in love with God. Remember that I'm a soul. Fall in love with God. Serve Him with love and be nice to everybody. Be nice to the objects, be nice to the plants, be nice to the sky, to the clouds, to the animals, to other humans. Be especially nice to other practitioners of bhakti. Be nice to oneself as well. And then what will we get? The demigoddesses are here are saying, you'll get everything. You'll get everything. You'll get Bhagavat Padam. You'll get the abode or the feet of the Lord. You'll go to the best place. You go to the, you're surpassing a place where the food and the sex and the sunrises are a gazillion times better. You'll surpass that. You go to the best place of Anandam Buddhivardhanam, unlimited happiness. You get to stay there forever. There's no death whatsoever. And one feels like Dhruva felt when he saw the Lord, all of my desires are fulfilled. As Krishna says to Arjuna, one who takes up this yoga is not bereft of the results of other things. Right? Arjuna is really afraid. Well, suppose I take up bhakti or in that case, Ashtanga yoga. Suppose I take up Ashtanga yoga and I fail. I will have given up my material life to take up Ashtanga yoga, and so I'll fail at material life, and then I'll give up Ashtanga yoga because I'll fail at that, and so I'll have nothing. I'll be like some little cloud in the sky that has no shelter. And Krishna says, no. He says, it's not like that. If you take up yoga, you won't be bereft of anything else. And so the demigoddesses are saying this too. And so therefore, they're looking at the benefits of human life. Short, focused, simple process. A simple, easy to understand, easy to execute process that gives you the best possible result, and everything else is included in that. Right? Everything else is included. You don't have to worry about anything else. You know, some kind of contract where everything's part of the contract. You don't need to negotiate everything separately. Right? So, and there's no need, therefore, to take up karmakanda and just try to be a good person, do pious activities, or take up gyan karma and try to philosophically be detached, or take up yoga and try to mechanically be detached. So it's very, very easy as a Kali Yuga human to lament. I have caught myself doing it uncountable times. Being a human in Kali Yuga, materially speaking, is not very much fun. We don't get a lot of pleasures, even if we have a very nice Kali Yuga life. And materially, I've had a pretty good life altogether. Still, it's not very nice. It's still not very nice. There's so many difficulties. So many difficulties. The planet's polluted. The soil's polluted. The air's polluted. The water's polluted. Everybody's corrupt. Do we want this corrupt politician or that corrupt politician? We can't trust the medicines we get. They may be all polluted and corrupt. They may make us sicker. The list of side effects is worse than the list of cures. Right? Our food, it doesn't have taste. It doesn't have nutrition. Our relationships, you know, it's not a big deal anymore to find out, oh, this person's gotten, they've gone through their fourth divorce. People vow things and turn on you in a minute. People don't keep their word. Right? So, you know, our food betrays us, our politicians, our doctors, businesses, our friends, our family, our body is betraying us all the time. Our mind is nuts. I mean, Arjuna said 5,000 years ago, Chanchala Himana Krishna, it's gotten a lot worse. Our minds are jumping around a lot more now than they did 5,000 years ago. And, you know, even bhakti seems really hard. Bhakti seems really hard. 16 rounds a day? Oh my God. No intoxication, no illicit sex, no meat, fish, and eggs, no gambling. Wake up at 4 in the morning? Oh my God. So hard. So we may be lamenting. Why can't it be easier? Why can't I have a working body and live in a nice place? And so it's very easy to lament. And I think, you know, Prabhupada often says the definition of a Shudra is one who laments. So it's very easy to lament our situation and lament our circumstances and secretly hope that some airplane comes from the heavenly planets to take us there. It's a nicer place to live. But every situation, as Prabhupada quotes in this purport, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka, Punarvarti Narjuna, Mamapecha, Dukantaya. Every situation in this material world has its downsides. And often the upsides and the downsides are two different ways of looking at the same thing. You have a short life. Oh, downside. You have a short life. Upside. You know, you have lots of sense pleasure. Upside. You have lots of sense pleasure. Downside. The faults and the good qualities are just the same. So instead of lamenting, say, what in my situation, and this is true as a general thing, as a human being in Kali Yuga, but what, it's also specific.
what about my situation is favorable for Krishna consciousness? What about my situation is favorable for spiritual life? I remember hearing a talk by Bhakti Chuswami in London, Soho Street, where he was talking about Prabhupada's example of the blind man and the lame man. You know, that the West was blind and that the East is lame, and that when they combine together, it's efficient. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, you know, my taking up Krishna consciousness from a Western background actually gives me some advantages. I'm kind of both in the same person. I have the advantage of the West and the advantage of the East. And nowadays people are really looking to women for leadership. So all of a sudden I thought there's some advantage to being a white American woman. I had some advantage in preaching and some advantage in Krishna consciousness. And it was quite a revelation to me because I had always seen my particular birth and body as an impediment rather than as a facility. And whatever it is, we have a lot of money, how can we use that? We're very poor, how can we use that? Right? We have a lot of family and friends all loving, how can we use that? We only have one friend and no family, how can we use that? Our body's really healthy and strong, how can we use that? Our body's falling apart, how can we use that? We're young, how can we use that? We're old, how can we use that? We're a man, how can we use that? We're a woman, how can we use that? Whatever situation we're in, what's the advantage? Because these demigoddesses, really, they don't need to be lamenting. I mean, it's very nice that they're appreciative of Prithu and Archie. That's a very good thing, that they have that appreciation. It's always nice to appreciate others. At the same time, it's not good to lament our situation. What happens when the demigods are lamenting is then they have to come to the earth planet and take birth as human beings. But actually, they could go back to Godhead and achieve perfection from their own position. So the demigod should also, they should look at their own position. How can I be Krishna conscious here? What advantage do I have? What facility do I have? It's wonderful to praise others and to appreciate what others have without envy. But mostly we should look at our own situation and see, how is it an advantage? As my daughter likes to say, instead of saying, why is Krishna doing this to me, say, why is Krishna doing this for me? Why is Krishna doing this for me? What in my situation is a blessing? What in my situation is a benediction? How am I blessed? How can I use my present situation to my advantage? So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
You said twice, I think, and I don't know if you meant it as a pun or not, but if you did, it was brilliant. When you're talking about how we don't have much time left, you said there's a deadline.
Yes, yes.
Was that meant as a pun?
It was meant as a pun, yes.
Oh, okay, good. Anyway, yeah, well stated. I was thinking that this is an example when King Parikit only had 7 days to live, he took that as such a blessing and he got so serious.
Yes, that's right.
And that's like sort of the quintessential example. But Prabhupada was, I remember one tape, in fact, I copied it somewhere, I have it on my computer. Prabhupada was talking about King Parikit, he had 7 days to live, how serious he became. Then Prabhupada said, but we have to become, and he said it like this, he said, we have to become more serious than Parikit Maharaj. He says, because we don't know if we have 7 weeks or 7 days or even 7 minutes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Ramananda has a question in the chat, mother-in-law.
Okay, let's see this. Problem of feeling a sense of urgency regarding pushing us to advance in devotional service because death is near. Wouldn't this particular motivation not pertain to the devotee since advancement in bhakti is not in our hands? Huh. So what is the point of being in anxiety about our own spiritual advancement anyway, since the gift of bhakti is not a thing to be achieved? Simply endeavor to please Guru and Gauranga and our next destination is not in our hands. What is it? Let's see.
God is not partial. I will find it. Not partial. Okay, this is Bhagavad Gita 5:29, the Bhakti Ramayagatapa verse. The Lord is not partial towards anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness. Ta-da! We could also say that everything depends on mercy. So, say advancement's not in their hands. I don't believe that. I give this example all the time, so you must be very bored of it. But, you know, let's say that somebody offends me, right? Each of us has someone who's offended us, I'm sure. So think about someone who's offended you. And pick somebody who's really, really, really offended you, like really bad. So if that person wants to restore the relationship, is the restoration of the relationship in their hands or your hands? Well, in one sense, it's all in their hands. If someone's cheated me, lied to me, etc., they have to prove over some period of time in a very serious way that they're sorry and that they've rectified themselves. Now, the relationship isn't restored until I say it's restored because I'm the offended party. At the same time, I'm not going to say it's restored unless they demonstrate that they've changed and they really want it restored. So, on the one hand, the offender can never demand, okay, you know, I want to come back. And the offender cannot say, you know, they don't have the final say, the offender, about whether or not the relationship is restored. At the same time, it's really all in the hands of the offender to show that they're sincere and they're serious. So if we say, well, you know, the person I offended, it's up to them whether or not they want me. So what can I do? I mean, if I offend somebody and I just say, well, I can't do anything about it, they have to decide when they're going to accept me again and forgive me again. But if I don't do anything about it, why would they ever forgive me and accept me? You know, I have to do my best. And if I do my best to show to them that I'm sincere and they still don't offend me, then what I usually do is I wait a while and then again I come and I say, I'm really sorry. It depends how much I want the relationship back. So in one hand, it's all mercy. But on the other hand, that mercy is given according to our sincerity, which is demonstrated in our bhakti. So, yeah. Okay, anybody else?
Well, I was just going to say, that was a very nice answer, but I'm amazed how you can look up quotes that fast. That's like lightning.
It's called I have the database on my computer, and I'm giving class on my computer.
Probably 20 minutes to...
Anyway. Well, all right, but I'm teaching Bhakti Shastri. We're right now starting chapter 6. We just finished chapter 5, and that's a verse, that's a quote in the purport of the last verse of chapter 5. So I've just been studying it, so don't give me that much credit, but thank you. You also got to realize that that's my service. You know, my service is research and study and writing. That's kind of what I do. So if I wasn't able to do that for a lot of things, that would be pretty bad after all these decades of having that as my main service. I mean, that would be pretty pathetic. So, you know, it depends what your main service is. You know, if your main service is cooking and you don't know where to find the turmeric in the kitchen, you know, that's pretty bad. You say, whoa, you found the turmeric in 2 seconds. You know, like I've been cooking in this kitchen for 10 years. So, yeah, I like that. But thank you. Thank you for giving me some credit. Ultimately, anybody have any other questions? I mean, if you really want to be impressed, I'd have to find the quote in the first canto that says the opposite. I know it's in the first canto, and I know it says the opposite, and I've used it a lot in my preaching with Christians, but it would take me a little longer to find it. I could try.
Anyone else have a question?
If nobody's going to say anything, I want to just to finish this point that I was making. The thing about being in anxiety about you're coming to the end of your life, getting old, it's going to happen very soon, who knows when, but how am I going to advance in my spiritual life? But still, yes, what you're saying, as far as we have to show our sincerity, yes, yes, I understand all that. But as far as, that's like an ongoing process that has nothing directly related to when we're going to meet our end. Or am I mistaken?
Well, I think it does have a relationship. It has a relationship psychologically. I mean, there's just a lot of evidence that there's a psychological relationship. That if I think I have a lot of time and I'm a lot less likely to prioritize something that needs to be done. I mean, isn't it like that for most of us? You know, if I think, well, I have lots and lots of time to get this done, especially if I think that I'm... here we have a nice quote about this, but it wasn't the one I was looking for. Katha Upanishad 1.2.23, quoted in Mudja 12.61 purport. The Supreme Lord is not obtained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, or even by much hearing. He is obtained only by one who he himself chooses. To such a person he manifests his own form. But there's another quote in the first canto that I wasn't able to find right away. At least this is my own experience and the studies that I've read on this. And in the last year or so, I read a book on the topic that whenever we have scarcity of something, like money or like time, it causes a certain kind of focus that doesn't happen when we don't. I mean, if you think about this with money, let's say you have a lot of money. Like, you just don't worry about money at all. Then you are likely to buy things that you may not even need, or, you know, you're not sure if you're going to use it or not, but it looks good. You're not going to be so careful about your purchases if you've got a lot of money. You know, if you've got far more money than is needed to live. But if you just barely got enough money to live, you know, if you just barely, you're going to be much more careful about how you spend your money. You're going to be more focused. And it's the same way with time. You know, if I have something to do that I figure will take me, you know, 1 or 2 weeks of focused work, and I've got 6 months to get it done, probably the first 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 months, I might work on it a little bit here and there, but I'm not going to be focused on it. And when it starts getting near the end, then I'm more focused. Oh my God, I'm running out of time. I've got to get this done. It's just psychologically the way that we work. So the fact that we have a very short human life gives us, this is what the demigoddesses are saying, the fact that we have a very short human life gives us a kind of impetus that isn't really present in the demigods who have a very long life. So in one hand, the demigods have more facility to become Krishna conscious than we do. They really do. But they may not be attached to it. Now, I'm not saying we should run around all the time under pressure, because that's exhausting and it's not sustainable. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we should have a focus, and that human life, especially in Kali Yuga, helps us to have a focus. It does. I mean, that's what Bhagavatam is saying here, and that is a practical benefit of human life. It's like that. And yeah, ultimately it's up to Krishna's mercy. And again, it's not like I want to be like, oh my God, it's all up to me and I better hurry up and be stressed. Not like that. But I have a focus. I'm not going to be as distracted. All right. Speaking about focus, I have a meeting at 3 o'clock for which I have to get something done. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mother.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. Goodbye.